Listen.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Flicks the Church Forgot. I'm currently speaking to you not from the usual place. Normally, I'm talking to you from my little home studio. Well, it's not exactly something so dramatic as that. It's sort of like a box that has foam in it. Anyway, but I'm talking to you from a different place now. I'm actually at Luton Airport, which is an airport that's very close to where I live, pretty much. And I'm waiting for my flight because I'm about to go on a little adventure. I'm heading off to Transylvania in about 2 hours, and so I'm going to be heading to a place called Sibiu, and when I get there, me and my wife are going to be collected by a mysterious couple. Well, they're not that mysterious, but it's basically we're not going to a normal sort of hotel, as it were, but we've discovered a company called Secret Transylvania, who they offer sort of bespoke holidays for people who want to investigate Transylvania, and so that's what we're going to be doing today. And I'm doing an article while I'm out there about some of the local folklore and things like that, and I've taken my recorder along to record an interview that I'm doing with a lady over there. And so I figured, well, why not just bring along my recorder and record a few things on the way. Oh my word, is that a vampire in the background? No, I think it's a crying baby being bitten by Lucy Weston or something like that. Let's get away from that. So I'm currently at Luton Airport just waiting for the flight to go. I'm going to be exploring some Dracula-themed things when I'm out there, obviously. I'm going to be visiting Bran Castle, which is the classic castle that is supposed to be linked to Dracula, but as we'll progress in this episode, we'll discover perhaps it's not linked as majorly as people seem to think. And also, we're going to be looking into some of the creepy things that we can see over there, as well as the nice stuff. For now, I'm going to... Don't worry, that's not me. So I can go and get myself something to eat. So I'm going to head off to do that now. See you in a bit. Hello again, you join me now on the flight to Transylvania. My wife's sleeping soundly by my side, and just out the window I can look out and I can see some mountainous region of Europe. I'm not quite sure exactly where I am. I'm on a budget flight, right, so we don't particularly have any GPS stuff going on in front of us on little screens. Rather, I'm just sort of jammed into a chair trying to sort of work out how long it might be until we actually land. So in the meantime, I thought I'd share with you some thoughts about Bram Stoker himself. When I get to Transylvania, I'm not only going to be looking at the vampire stuff, but it seems crazy not to address vampires, and particularly Bram Stoker and Dracula, if I'm going to a place like Transylvania. Now, Bram Stoker himself was not appreciated for his other works. I guess Lair of the White Worm was probably his most famous. That was made into a really crazy film from the 1980s. But nothing really in the Dracula League. And his real fame was so much as an author, was as the manager of the Lyceum Theatre, which gets a nice screen check, actually, in Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, which I watched recently in preparation for my trip. Not the greatest of movies in the world, pretty hit and miss, but some good visuals in it. Anyway, it seems to me that Bram Stoker's legacy is assured because the character in the story of Dracula is so relatable and adaptable. But at the time, Stoker was really overshadowed by Henry Irving, the actor that he worked for as an assistant through the Lyceum Theatre. If you will, it was almost like Henry Irving was the Tom Cruise of his day in popularity. So to think that his manager now, who Tom Cruise's manager, could end up being way more famous in the future than Tom Cruise ever was would give you an idea of how strange the situation was, how history chooses its heroes and drops some people into the obscurity of time. And that's what happened with Bram Stoker, not particularly famous in his day, but now is far more infamous, or famous rather, than Henry Irving himself. In fact, at the time, Stoker, I believe, had some really high-ranking friends in terms of people from, you know, Oscar Wilde and Walt Whitman and all sorts of other people. I think he knew Walt Whitman. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But he did have quite a lot of high literary figures in his circle. Pretty impressive Facebook, if he had that at the time. Anyway, Stoker was born in 1847, and his dad, being Abraham Stoker, hence the name Bram from Abraham. And apparently he was a pretty sickly child who says himself in a two-volume biography, not of himself, but of Henry Irving, that he never knew what it was to stand upright until he was 7 years old. Apparently he was carried around the house by his mother all the time. You can imagine how stressful that would have been. You know, it's not very pleasant. But he was influenced by his parents sharing spooky Irish folk tales to him. Now, bear in mind that in Britain and Ireland, people have been driving stakes through the heart of executed criminals and chopping off their heads to ensure they don't return. Like, that has happened well before Dracula ever came out. And so it's not a surprise to see these folk tales giving Stoker a sort of influence to write these sorts of stake-to-heart, crazy, from back-from-the-dead type stories. Now, in 1996, Barbara Bedford wrote a biography of Stoker, and he says that his mother used to regale him with tales of cholera outbreaks in his town, and would even talk about how some of the family were forced to drink blood extracted from the cattle, including the family cow. And so, you know, you can start to see the seeds of some of his ideas for Dracula and the modeling on vampires, but sort of just drawing in the things from his past. The idea that Dracula may have been modeled on Henry Irving himself is actually quite convincing. Stoker started writing theatrical reviews, and when he wrote a glowing piece on Henry Irving in Hamlet in 1876, Irving read it and summoned Stoker to his hotel room one Sunday afternoon. And while they were there, they got on like a house on fire, and Irving performed poetry. And Stoker says that he was so in awe of this man's dominance and power that he sat spellbound. And there's certainly an echo of Jonathan Harker meeting Dracula for the very first time. In fact, I was reading a book by a guy called David Isaac, and he points out that Stoker claims to have stayed up with Irving until dawn, mesmerized by the sheer force of his personality. And on Dracula, of course, Harker stays up with dawn with Dracula. So there's definitely some Henry Irving-style influences going on here. Now, sadly, Bram Stoker never really tasted the sort of recognition he would eventually receive for Dracula. He died at the age of 64. Interestingly, within a week of the Titanic sinking in 1912, I think that was. Anyway, apparently he died when on the day he died, he was found with some of his early stories spread out on his bed. I think he was actually still planning, even in those final moments, he was keen to try and explore the possibility of publishing some further works. But it was Dracula that really made the difference. Now, quite how Bram Stoker managed to strike such cultural gold with Dracula is hard to say, especially because the rest of his work, it tends to be largely ignored and even is classed as hack writing by some. Mind you read some reviews of the Dracula when it first came out, and some of the newspapers thought that that indeed was hack writing too. But the bottom line is, he pulled together the perfect blend of influences to craft a tale that seems as immortal as its main character, and it is the story of Dracula that continues to this day and has influenced multiple movies, hundreds of films. Really, Dracula is only probably bested by portrayals of Sherlock Holmes in various different films. But when you think Sherlock Holmes always has different stories, whereas Dracula tends to have, it's the same, usually the same pattern of story that is repeated. And I think so, that is a sign to me that Dracula is like an incredible creation that seems to have made a massive impact on society. And because of that, Bram Stoker is going to live on in future generations because his Dracula invention was just simply so powerful. Now, I'm not sure if you can hear that, but I'm currently outside in the middle of the night, pretty much. It's midnight. And I'm here in Transylvania in a village called Ciesnodor, I think it is. It's an old Saxon village. And it's pretty cool. I mean, I can just describe it to you now. I can look up at the top of this really big hill, and there's a fortified church up there looking all spooky. I'm living inside, I'm staying inside this Saxon house upstairs. Up high above me I can see the full moon and plenty of stars to see, and around me I can hear dogs barking. When I arrived here, by the way, we got off the plane and got a lift to the place we're staying, and I saw a local lady pushing a child in a buggy, and this local lady was crossing herself vigorously. I'm not quite sure why, but there you go. And then we passed a cemetery, and just outside this cemetery there was this there was a whole bunch of people like selling. This was like quite late. And outside this cemetery, there was these people selling all sorts of different flower arrangements, and from different religions, I think, so that people who wanted to go into this giant graveyard could take in flowers for the dead. Anyway, here I am in the midst of Transylvania, looking around at some pretty impressive scenery. How it works here is that we're staying in this house with some other people, so we've got a little clan together. And we've got our own private bar, so it's been cool to be in there tonight and chatting about various things, all vampire-related often. And a couple of the couples who are with us, they're living about 10 or 15-minute walk from where we are, so they've had to walk through this very dark village to get home, which is kind of spooky. I'm slightly envious that they have to have the walk home, but it's probably for the best, because my wife, who's with me, prefers being actually on site like we are. I'm going to check in a little bit later, but just to say, we did talk a little bit about horror movies tonight. I think the people here are quite into sort of more recent vampire fare, Underworld and Twilight and all that sort of stuff, but I was there bigging up the retro horror movies, and even got a chance to mention Zoltan Out of Dracula as well, which most people hadn't seen, but still mentioned it, and Salem's Lot as well. One of the guys there knew that. Anyway, it's midnight. I've had a few whiskeys, so I think it's probably time that I headed to bed. Tomorrow, we're going to be heading up to the Carpathian Mountains. And so maybe I'll be able to check in there, depending if I'm able to bring the recorder with me or not. So, it's time to say goodnight. Oh, and also, when we got into our room, just one more thing. It's when we got into our room, I opened up my... Oof. The lights have just went off. Can you hear the dogs? I'm going to whisper, because I think one of the dogs isn't that far away. When we got back into my room, into our room, I opened up the drawer to put some socks away, and inside the drawer was a crucifix, a clove of garlic, and an Egyptian ankh. So they seem to be covering all bases. Anyway, it's nighttime. I'm in Transylvania, and it looks kind of beautiful. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye. Well, I'm just sitting here in my the bedroom of the place where I'm staying. I think I already mentioned that it's in an old Saxon village, and so the house itself is Saxon. It's been interesting driving around in Transylvania and seeing the design of the houses, and how so many of them have these wide doors at the front and wide gates, so it's enough to let a horse and cart through, and I've certainly seen plenty of horse and cart action since we've been here. This room apparently... back in the day, it used to be the room of the seamstress, and she would sit in here and, I don't know, whatever seamstresses do. But in the middle of the night, I keep hearing this noise. And I'm like, what is that? What is that? And then after a while, I've realized it's probably just the bed that I'm lying on. And when I move, it makes that noise. But anyway, it was interesting. I've been doing a bunch of different things since I last spoke on this. I went up to the Carpathian Mountains and we stayed in an ice hotel, and that was just amazing. And certainly being up there, I mean, we went right up to the near to the peaks and stayed at this place called Ballyalack, I think that's called. But the snow was immense, and just walking around there, I mean, there were three films that came to mind, actually, or three stories that came to mind. Number one was completely The Thing. It just looks like that place. And at one point I had to whip my phone out and play some of Ennio Morricone's music to The Thing as I was walking across this just completely snowed landscape. Also, I couldn't help but think of Snowbeast, the corny TV movie about the Yeti. It had that vibe to it because it had these little cabanas and things where you could stay. But also, H.P. Lovecraft's At the Mountains of Madness, I mean, surrounded by all these mountains, and it certainly gives you an appreciation of the desolation of being in Arctic or Antarctic conditions. I mean, we were nowhere near anything like that, really, although we did get stuck in a blizzard and we did sleep in pretty much an authentic igloo. You know, when we went walking through this tunnel, and we went snow tunneling and went to the other end, and we were just seeing just these huge, creepy, weird looking icicles in the dark, with my torch, you know, just suddenly discovering there's this giant hanging icicle like directly above my head, and I'm like, whoa, better get out the way. If that drops, I'm gonna get impaled, ironically. Anyway, so that was all really interesting, and just thinking about H.P. Lovecraft at the Mountains of Madness and this sense of messed up geometry that he really is into, certainly got a taste of some of that. And particularly when the snow gets so blustering so much, and at some point, like, I couldn't work out where I was, and that was pretty cool. Also, it was quite fun going tubing, just getting these sort of dinghy type things, these sort of rubber inflated rings, and going to the top of this hill and just bombing down there. It's a good laugh. Anyway, today we're going to be heading off to Bran Castle. So looking forward to going there and seeing some of the Dracula tat that they sell there. I know that really there isn't hardly any link to Dracula other than maybe inspirational. But we're going to find out a little bit more about that later. Bye-bye. And so today I've been able to visit one of the most famous tourist destinations in Transylvania, which is called Bran Castle. Now, Bran Castle is this gorgeous hilltop fortress and a national landmark, and it looks incredible. It's certainly smaller than I expected it to be, and it's not as perched high on the cliff as I was expecting either, but it is certainly built into a cliff, a sort of fortified castle with these beautiful sort of orange tiled roofs and pointed turrets and spires and things, and just surrounded by forest and woodland. It was stunning, and while we were there it was starting to snow as well, so it just looked really, really fantastic. But Bran Castle is perhaps a really good example of why Dracula fans or vampire fans on a visit to this sort of place better prepare themselves for some confusion, perhaps even disappointment. And somewhere like Bran Castle certainly looks the type of place where you might see a vampire scurrying down the external walls, like we see in the really spooky part of the novel, and it's picked up in Coppola's version and I think a few others. But the links to Dracula at a place like this, and indeed in Transylvania itself, is extremely tenuous. Now, author Bram Stoker, as far as we know, I mean, he certainly never set foot in Romania, and certainly not into Transylvania, therefore. Transylvania is in Romania, by the way, just in case you weren't sure, and it's a real place. And Bram might never have read about Bran, castle. Anyway, but this doesn't stop the locals here pushing the Dracula merchandise to the absolute max. When you go down to the bottom of Bran Castle, you'll see just loads of stalls selling all sorts of like tacky toys with Vlad the Impaler looking out on them. And hey, I'm a sucker for horror tats, so I loaded myself up with mugs and shot glasses and the ubiquitous fridge magnet. Well, like I say, staring out of most of these products is Vlad the Impaler, who was classed as a national hero in Romania. But really, to most people outside of Romania, he's this blood-drinking psychopath. Now, he was the inspiration for Dracula, wasn't he? Well, not necessarily. A lot of people seem to think he was, but that's not necessarily the case. Now, there are these this American college professor called Raymond T. McNally and Romanian historian Radu Florescu, and they weren't the first. They certainly weren't the first to make the link, but they published an influential book called *In Search of Dracula* in 1972, which popularized this notion that Vlad Tepes, that means the Impaler, was a direct inspiration for Count Dracula. Like I say, they weren't the original people to do this. In fact, there was a film, I think, out. Like long before that, a foreign language film that suggested that. I can't remember offhand what it was called, but it was this 1972 book that really pushed this idea to the masses. In fact, the theory now has become so widely quoted and accepted by many that even Christopher Lee himself, you know, Count Dracula, as it were, even he insists it so. In the Dracula book in 1975, Donald F. Glut quotes Lee as saying that Stoker was fully acquainted with the historical aspects concerning the life of Vlad. And on to films like Francis Ford Coppola's version, who took this fusion much further. He's quoted, actually, in the book of the film, saying that this was a scrupulously true depiction of Stoker's novel. But that's really stretching. I mean, they really make a lot of liberties. They take a lot of liberties with the original text, and not least because they present Vlad Tepes and the Count as basically the same person, as well as having this Dark Shadows Barnabas Collins style crush on a long dead lover thrown in for good measure. I have crossed oceans of time for you. All that sort of stuff is great and probably set the seeds for Twilight romantic paranormal romance and all that sort of stuff, but really it was pushing stuff into Stoker's novel that wasn't there. Yet this Vlad Dracula connection ends up making some scholars' blood boil. There's a lady called Elizabeth Miller who has made a painstaking study of Stoker's notes, and interestingly, I've seen some of Stoker's notes in reality, but not for the book, but rather for the play that he penned based on the book. But Elizabeth Miller has studied Stoker's notes for the Dracula, the text itself, and she puts it very bluntly in her book, Dracula Sense and Nonsense. It's sort of described as the nitpicker's guide to the Dracula legend, and she says that the bottom line is that Stoker knew next to nothing about the historical Dracula. The little he did know about the Vlad's family, and particularly Vlad the Impaler's father, was that he was known by the name Dracula, or Dracula, which was Wallachian for the devil. But also, this word Dracula could also mean not only to be cruel, but also to have courage and great cunning. And that's certainly what Vlad the Impaler, Vlad Tepes, was famous for. It appears then that Bram Stoker simply thought the name Dracula sounded cool with its devilish connection, and it's hardly like this direct modeling on a ruler that he knew hardly anything about. Now, Elizabeth Miller suggests that there's no evidence in Stoker's notes that he'd even heard of the impaling stuff either. Still, though, Vlad himself is without a doubt a very important figure in Romanian history. But even the locals around here are confused about whether he had fangs or not. I spoke to a man from the village I'm staying at, and he described Vlad as the first vampire. And when asked why he said that, he said this was due to the legend of him sipping a drop of his enemy's blood with wine. The result of all this is that the legends and the pop culture assumptions about this place really can get quite disorientating for someone to come and visit. But certainly, that doesn't put me off one bit. I'm quite happy to visit somewhere like Bran Castle and see not only the beauty of it, but just the sense of, like, you know, you're walking in a Hammer horror movie in some senses. And certainly, the feeling of the place is inspirational. One other thing to mention is tucked away in Brand Castle, we discovered behind a heavy wooden door, was a stomach-churning exhibition of torture implements that basically tell you two things about the medieval mindset. Number one, the people who lived back then were masters of cruelty and invented some hideous devices to hurt people. And number two, they had a serious issue with women. Now, we saw some grisly equipment on display, and it was just very interesting to see it, seeing as I've just a few episodes ago did a special episode exploring the Salem witch trials and the cruelty based on the movie that I reviewed, Mark of the Devil. And seeing some of this stuff for real was just insane. I mean, some of this stuff was, most of this stuff was used on women for crimes ranging from stealing to, you know, having intercourse with the devil. And there's this queasy sexual nature to all of these things too, with like anal and genital mutilation being a hot favorite. I saw a set of iron prongs that looked like something you would use to flip meat on a barbecue. And when I looked at the little sign, it said that this was an oral, rectal, and vaginal pair. You know what I mean? This is like a device designed to basically open the walls of orifices until they become irreparably torn. It's just like hideous. And next to that, I saw something called the breast ripper, which is also known as the spider or the tarantula. And this was just simply an iron clamp built to tear the chests off unmarried mothers who were suspected of self-abortion. And above it was a painting of a woman having her nipples clamped by like some leering men. It's pretty dark stuff. At one point, I stumbled down the stairs and I had to like reach out and grab what I thought was a banister to steady myself. But I quickly pulled my hand back to find that I'd literally just grabbed the tip of something called a Judas cradle. Now, a Judas cradle is a hefty wooden pyramid on the end of a stake. And that was designed to basically violate the anus of a supposed bad person as they were forced to sit on it and were dragged downwards. As we're walking around, the tourists were sort of giggling nervously at all of these horrors on show. And to be honest, so did I and the people I was with, because you can't help but giggle in the face of such freakiness. But when I slowed down to touch the blades themselves, you know, it's not hard to get a sting of that tragic revulsion of all of those sort of weeping screams those monstrous gadgets must have witnessed. And it certainly brought back those feelings of injustice that I was feeling when I was exploring the Mark of the Devil film, and just so saddened by the witch trials and the hunting down of people. Scary stuff. Okay, so I'm currently in the Hilton in Sibiu in Romania, not too far from where we've been staying. This is actually a chance for us to unwind before going home. And so my wife and I have been in a spa and I've just had a deep tissue massage. First time I've ever had a deep tissue massage. Man, that was intense. Just lay there for like an hour while this woman like pushed on my lungs so hard I think I'm gonna cough one up later, but it was great. I mean, it was, I feel very, very chilled out and relaxed. Anyway, just to describe this place to you, just to give you an idea of where I am, I'm in a pretty opulent sort of tea room right now, sitting by myself. My wife's in getting some facial or something, so yeah, I'm just sitting here drinking Earl Grey tea with a little dash of honey, and bizarrely there's a giant Mickey Mouse woman walking around, because I think they're having some sort of cosplay convention on or something, but just up the road there's some sort of thing going on where people are coming in dressed up as people out of like TV shows and stuff, so don't know what that was. I think the nuclear bomb has finally dropped. Anyway, let me tell you a little bit about where we went to yesterday. We had a really interesting trip to Bran Castle and then to Rasnov Fortress. Let me tell you a little bit about Rasnov Fortress, because I think that's a little bit lesser known than Bran Castle. It's a hilltop fortress that was built as a refuge for Saxon settlers in the Middle Ages, because they wanted to protect themselves against being raided by the Turks and other people, the Tatars or something. I can't remember exactly how to say it. So it's pretty old, and it was built in 1215 by Teutonic Knights. And it's only ever been conquered once, ever. And I'm not surprised, because when I went up there, like, it's pretty hardcore. And you can see, even, they have these little shops inside this old fort, which is right on the top of a hill. We had to get a little train thing, sort of tractor train to get us up to the top. But they're up there selling, you know, like a Knights of the Round Table type chainmail and things like that. So that was quite cool. But while I was up there, there was an interesting little legend that I discovered about. Basically, that I found this well. It's like 143 meters deep. And in fact, across Transylvania, I keep finding these wells everywhere. There was one right outside where we were staying. And they're used. Some of them are still used today. Anyway, this well that's in Rasnor Fortress is 143 meters deep, and a legend apparently tells about how there was a really long siege in this fortress, and the citizens of Rasnov were getting a bit freaked out, worrying that they might not be able to get fresh water or not, and so they caught two Turkish soldiers, and these soldiers were ordered to dig a well right in the center of the fortress, the one that I saw. And these two men were told, you know, if you dig this well, you're going to be fine. We'll give you your freedom once the well's completed. Anyway, it took them 32 years to finish digging, and the nasty locals decided not to keep their promise. And not only did they not let them free, but they actually just murdered them, which is like a bit harsh, I thought. But anyway, there you go. I might as well, while I'm sitting here in this comfy hotel right now, I might as well tell you a little bit more about something else that happened last night, which is really interesting. As I may have mentioned before, I'm writing an article about my trip for the Fortean Times, a sort of Fortean Traveller type article, and that's supposed to explore some of the folklore and the legends of the area. Last night, I had the opportunity to meet a lady called Doris. Now, Doris was, I think she's 26 or something, I can't quite remember. In her 20s, anyway. She just got engaged the day before. And she came to the pub that was part of the little complex where we were staying, the sort of residence-only pub. And she is the daughter, the adopted daughter of the village wise woman in the village that we have been staying in. And she was able to come and sit and have a drink with me. And I asked her a lot about the local folklore and just to find out a little bit about that. The overarching feel that I discovered was that when you look into the folklore and legends of a place like Romania and Eastern Europe, and in particular Transylvania, you will find the Fortean sort of paranormal edge to things is much more steeped in religion and expressed in religious terms. And so the idea of, you know, ghosts and things like that tend to be couched in terms like, you know, the devil wants to hurt you, or, you know, if you don't honor God, or if you're a bad person, then God will allow something horrible to happen. And that was certainly a sort of narrative thread that I've noticed going through some of the folklore here, which I find interesting to compare with Britain and America and the sort of, I guess, you know, the Western Europe and the Americas and other places, where we're much more secular. And so when I have conversations, and I've had plenty of conversations while I've been here with the English people who are here with me, when we've been discussing the paranormal or other things like that, they do not couch it in religious terms. They talk about it more in a sort of pseudoscience type way. And I think that's really interesting and indicative of our society, of the culture in which I live. It's that people do not believe in God so much, and people don't believe in the devil as such anymore, or not as much, I should say. And yet, when they are presented with the idea of evidence for the paranormal, or indeed when they have maybe some sort of latent desire in them for the paranormal to be real, they actually start to describe it in more sort of pseudoscientific terms. So they'll say, you know, oh, well, the poltergeist did this, or, you know, maybe it's got something to do with stone tape theory, or you know, it's like the Illuminati are behind things, and like conspiracy theories, and all these other really interesting expressions of the strangeness of the world. But what was I just finding interesting is that, as you'll hear in a moment, a lot of the discussions and folklore around here are about the devil is out there, and the devil wants you.
Like Saxon people, yeah, that lived here, not Romanian. Saxon people, yeah, lived here. They were proud people, and they wanted to be the best at something.
Okay.
So they tried so hard to raise like sheep, but they couldn't, because Rocinari is the most famous village for shepherds and sheep. They tried to do so many ways, but they didn't know how to become the best at something. So they prayed to God to help them, and nothing happened. So somebody thought to pray to the devil to see if the devil will help them
to become good at something.
No, to become famous for something.
Oh, okay,
really.
Right, yeah.
So the devil came in the village and said that he's going to grant them the wishes as long as all the people that live here, all the people's souls, are going to go to him when they die.
Okay.
Yeah. And he did. Like, we are famous, and this is quite real, we are famous for the cherries we grow in this village. As you come down from Sibiu through the forest down, you can see those cherry trees, apple and cherry trees. And we were famous, and we are famous for the best cherries ever, or in Romania. But the side effect of making a deal with the devil, the people were too proud. And it happened. They say that Saxon people are proud people, but in Cisne Duara, they were so proud. They were too proud. And of course, their souls doesn't help. Yeah, their souls went to...
Well, there must be some pretty good cherries there.
They are. Believe me, I would like some cherries at the moment.
Is the idea of the devil, is that a common belief even today? I mean, do people still believe in evil? And
oh, we are 90% of our population in Romania are Orthodox.
Okay.
Well, I think it's probably about time to draw things to a close now, and just to say that I've had a fantastic time in Transylvania. It's been a wonderful holiday and a great trip to explore a land which has always been part of me as a bit of a horror movie fan. It's always been a part of my psyche when it comes to thinking about spooky old villages and creepy castles on the hill. Certainly if you were to visit Transylvania yourself, you'll see plenty of that, but there's a lot of richness and interesting culture there, and particularly for me, going up and staying in that ice hotel and being up in the set of the thing pretty much was pretty exciting. And so it was a really cool time that I had. Again, I would just recommend, if you're interested in going, to check out Secret Transylvania, who are a really good company. And they offer sort of bespoke holidays, but with an easily changeable itinerary, which is good because there's plenty to see in Transylvania. And, you know, they're a good company to go with. And they had fantastic reviews on TripAdvisor. And I certainly will be leaving a good review on there too. I haven't mentioned in this episode about something interesting called the Strigoi, which is this idea of when people die with unresolved issues in their life, that they may return as a Strigoi, a sort of ghost that crawls back into their bodies to menace the living. But I do talk about that in the article that I've written for the 14 Times, and so I'll let you know when that article is published, and if you're interested in reading more about that, about my trip, and see some photographs of my time there, then you can check that out. But I'll let you know that. Well, that's it anyway for this slightly different episode of the Flicks the Church Forgot, a sort of travelogue episode, but it was fun to make. And you know, if you want to get in touch, don't forget to email me at contactus@theflicksthechurchforgot.com, or better still, if you can follow me on Twitter at RevPeterLaws. It's a good way of sort of connecting. And you can go to the Facebook page at the flicksthechurchforgot.com. But until then, thank you for joining me on my little trip, and thanks for listening. And until next time, don't forget the Flicks the Church Forgot.
Come closer. Look into my eyes. I am Count Dracula, and I live on human blood. Don't be afraid. They're only bats, but when you hear the cry of the wolf at night, you will know that your time has come. Relax, my dear, for it is now time for Count Dracula to feed on your blood. Don't try to fight. You cannot win. Evil protects me, And you cannot escape. Soon, you will know eternal life.